Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man. I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
And welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your Primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis, and on this episode, we continue Tsunami Month as we transform and roll out for the Beast Wars Season 1. Yes, Beast Wars, the beloved series that fills so many of our hearts with joy. Beast Wars started out as a basically mid-season replacement for the Real Adventures Johnny Quest, initially just only having 1 week and then coming back later. And for many people, including myself of the Tsunami generation, this was our first introduction to Transformers. G1 Transformers came out the later half of the 1980s, but for most of us, including myself, we were still too young to not only probably watch it, but really remember it. And I think a lot of people don't remember G2, for that matter. So for, I think, a lot of people of our generation, Transformers Beast Wars was really our first introduction to the Transformers universe. And, it's a series that really stands on its own and yet does have its connections to G1. And the other thing I'm very excited to also talk about with this series is, you've heard me talk about the differences between anime and cartoons and the whole hand-drawn core technique of animation categorization before. One thing I don't get to talk much about is the two other core techniques, which are stop-motion live-action and modern CGI, and I'm very excited to finally be able to talk about that, because this is one of the first CGI television shows to be on television. This is from the same people who also did Reboot. So I'm very excited to talk about all of that. We will be talking about the whole modern CGI core technique when we get to animation and all of that. We have no email, so with that being said, let's get into cast and synopsis. First, our cast. Gary Chalk is Optimus Primal. Scott McNeil is Dinobot, Rattrap, and Waspinator. I don't have Thunderbolt here because he doesn't appear until the second season. Richard Newman is Rhinox. Ian James Corlett is Cheetor and Sentinel. Blue Makuma is Tigertron. Pauline Noonstone is Air Razor. David Kanye is Megatron. Don Brown plays Scorponok. Alex Willows plays Tarantulas. Doug Parker is Pterosaur. Venus Terizzo is Black Arachnia. And Jim Burns as Inferno. Synopsis. The Transformer Wars happened 100 years ago, and now there's peace between the Decepticons and the Autobots on Cybertron. But one lone Decepticon by the name of Megatron decides he's had enough, and he and his Predacons try to escape with a golden disc and are pursued by a space exploration team called the Maximals, led by Optimus Primal. They crash land after going through a time wormhole on a mysterious planet, where they find there is tons of Energon. So much so that they need to have alternate beast modes taken from the local animals to survive on the planet. From there on, they fight each other in what's known as the Beast Wars. So, with all of that being said, let's get into our review of Beast Wars Season 1. Welcome back, and let's start off with what we usually do. We have music, followed by animation. We'll then take a short break, and then finish off with acting and story. And like I said, let's start off with music, and let's talk about the Beast Wars opening and closing theme. It's definitely a unique theme. It's a theme that, when you hear it, you know immediately what show you're listening to. Though that also is probably added by the fact that you have the name Beast Wars in the theme itself, being said multiple times. So yeah, that definitely helps. But it really is a good theme. I love sort of the jungle beats of it. Yo, with the, I'm blanking on the name of the instrument, but the sort of, I don't want to call it bongo drums, but you know, those sort of hand drums that one might use for more of a jungle beat. But you definitely get this sort of jungle feel within the, you know, the song itself, and for that matter, a very primal feel from this intro, which is, again, also used as the closing theme. I also love the little guitar solo in there, you know, though in humming this right now, it also reminds me how sometimes I will be humming this song, and then for some strange reason, well, not a strange reason, because there's sort of a similarity in notes there, I'll automatically transform into, pun intended, into humming the song for Wild and Crazy Kids, which is pretty, I mean, think about it, you go, Wild and Crazy Kids. For all five of you who remember that show. God, I'm showing my age. But, yeah, it really is a good intro theme, and it really gets you into the show. Especially with the fast-paced sort of, not homage, but I'm trying to think of the montage of several scenes from the show. I love when I blank on words, don't you? And then there's the overall score of the show, which, you know, it's something we'll be talking about a lot here, is this is a kid show. Just like the original Transformers, this is an animated show that is meant to sell toys. So it sort of has sort of the music of a show that's meant to sell toys. I do like the particular themes, but it really is a soundtrack of 10 themes top. You know, there's no, like, individual characters, you know. There's several sort of dramatic themes, and there's comedic themes, and for that matter, there are some good themes. And really, when I think of those themes, I do think of Beast Wars. You know, sort of like that theme that you usually hear at the beginning of every episode. Da, 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 da. You know, definitely, for a lot of them, you do think of Beast Wars. But at the same point in time, the themes themselves are pretty standard when it comes to especially a show that is meant to sell toys. You know, again, this is Transformers. Transformers, G.I. Joe. There are a lot of these shows that are actually good, but they were still also to sell toys. You know, a concept created really in the 80s. It really is an 80s creation. And, you know, when you look back at Voltron, Robotech to an extent, but especially He-Man and G.I. Joe and Transformers and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know, again, a lot of these shows were very good and had good storylines, still were there to sell toys. And in this case, you definitely hear that in the music. With that, we're going to move on to animation. And again, first thing we're going to talk about here is the whole modern CGI core technique. Again, for those who've never heard me talk about this before, you know, I have what I call theory of animation categorization. You know, it basically how we categorize animation now that we've had, at the very least, enough history to do such. You know, it really is a theory of how I explain American anime to exist. And the theory goes, there are three core techniques of animation. There is live action stop motion, which includes things like Gumby and Robot Chicken, South Park and Wallace and Gromit. You have traditional hand-drawn, which has the cartoon and anime styles in it, and, you know, includes things like, you know, Animaniacs, Freakazoid, Batman the Animated Series, Gundam Wing, Hero Man, just to name a few. And then the last one, which is the youngest core technique, which has really only been around for 25 years, I want to say, because 92 would be 20. About 25 years, at the very least, is modern CGI, which has two styles in it, realistic and photorealistic. And, you know, Beast Wars is obviously a CG show, so it's part of that. You know, things like Final Fantasy VII, Advent Children, Final Fantasy Spirited Away, Shrek, Ice Age, Madagascar. Most of the kids' animated movies that come out today are part of the CGI style. And like I said, there are two styles within this core technique of modern CGI. That is realistic and photorealistic. An example of realistic would be this show. You know, this show is realistic, along with things like Reboot. Shows like the new CG Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, excuse me, show that's going to be premiering soon. And things like Shrek and Madagascar and Ice Age. An example of photorealistic would be Final Fantasy VII Advent Children, Final Fantasy Spirited Away. Oh my god. By the way, I'm sure a lot of people are like, what do you mean Final Fantasy Spirited Away? Is that a new show? I'm sorry. I just realized I've been saying the wrong name. Final Fantasy The Spirits Within. Boy, do I feel stupid. And I'm keeping this in just to show you how much of an idiot I can be. But Final Fantasy Spirit Within. And there have been a couple of other photorealistic. I'm blanking on the name of it, but I know there is a French photorealistic CG movie out there. It's like about time travel and stuff like that. So that is the CGI core technique that has really been around for about 25 years. It is the youngest of the core techniques, with stop motion live action and traditional hand-drawn being the two oldest. Actually, traditional hand-drawn being the oldest, and stop motion live action being the second oldest. Both pretty much having over 60 years of history, where, you know, again, modern CGI really only has 25. So it is a young technique of animation being used. And Beast Wars, as it relates, is one of the first television series to be completely CGI. You know, it definitely leads to the fact that when you look at Beast Wars probably now, it seems like a kid show that you might find normally on any of these sort of kid stations on Saturday morning. But back then, this was very, very revolutionary. It also leads to the fact that, you know, how CGI evolves and how quickly it's evolved and how realistic and everything and how much better CG has evolved, it does make this show its age. But my personal feeling on that is because of that, there is a nostalgic feeling now with this show that really helps the enjoyment of it. You know, you understand this is an old show. Yeah, I'm personally of that opinion. A lot of people will knock stuff for seeming like it's aged, but I'm personally of the opinion that aging of a show can really help its nostalgic feel, especially if it was very good. In the case of Beast Wars, the nostalgic feel of the show, because it is an early CG show, I think really helps it and really helps the appreciation of the animation. With that, let's move on to our next point, which is the overall style of Beast Wars. Again, like I said, CGI, but the overall style is a lot of earth tones in the series that I really like. Again, going with sort of the both primal aspect of this series and, more importantly, that animal aspect of the series. Not a lot of bright colors, at least not until season 2 and 3, which is a different story. But really, in this first season, it's really much more of a grounded, more earth-toned series. And because of that, there's a lot more earth-toned colors, which I really, really love. And I think it really makes this Transformers really, really that much more unique than other Transformers series. A lot of use of blacks and browns and grays and stuff like that. And, of course, the movement of the CGI, I think, is really, really spectacular. Even today, it still is really good. They do tend to sometimes look like toys, but again, this is a show selling toys. So it is not that surprising for them sometimes to have a toy-like feel to them. But still, there is a very organic feel as well. Really, a lot of the toy feeling that I'm talking about really happens in some of the early episodes, which, again, they're still working out the kinks. But as the episodes go on and they get more comfortable with the animation and get better at it, it definitely shows in the later episodes of Season 1, and for that matter, in Season 2 and 3. With that, let's move on to character designs. Let's start with the Maximals. I love a lot of the character designs here. I love the choice of animals. The rhinoceros, the gorilla, the rat, the cheetah. Again, you know, Dinobot being a Predacon first, you know, he was a dinosaur. But again, even him had a more mammal-like feel to him, even though he was a thunder lizard. being that, you know, again, the sort of the brown and the striped colors, very reminiscent of very tiger-like. And I say that as opposed to what we see with the Predacons. And, of course, Tigertron, you know, the Siberian tiger look, which is, that's what he is, a Siberian tiger, and the, you know, Airazor being a falcon. So I definitely love the choice of animals that they went with. I think they work for what they're going for and sort of the overall jungle feeling of the Maximals. I love Optimus Prime's Transformer mode. And for that matter, I love pretty much all of the Transformers robot modes. I think some get better in Season 2. And I love to see that evolution. But, you know, here, especially Rat Trap and Optimus Prime and Dinobot are definitely my three favorites as far as their transformed state. I also like that Tigatron and Cheetor are basically the same Transformer, and they're just different animals. So I like that there's similarity there as well. Moving on to the Predacons, and again, I love sort of more of the more deadly aspects, again, going with sort of the insect and sort of dinosaur theme. You have themes of death and poison here that you can definitely feel, you know, with the Tarantulas being a tarantula, Black Widow being a Black Widow, or say a Black Arachnid being a Black Widow, Megatron being a T-Rex, Pterosaur being a Pterodactyl, Waspinator being a Wasp, Scorponok being a Scorpion. Again, all of these animals are very deadly, very poisonous. You see that with Inferno, who's an ant. So you definitely get that feel, and I love sort of the color tones that sort of fit what those are. Again, the dinosaurs are sort of more darker base colors. Pterosaur has a, dark red color. Megatron having that sort of dark royal purple, which, again, I love that it's more of a royal purple aspect, being that he is a leader. And then, of course, with Waspinator, it's sort of the dark versions of bright colors, if I can put it in a way, for like Tarantulas and Black Arachnia and Inferno and Waspinator. And for that matter, Scorponok, though Scorponok more is more towards that desert tone there. But again, those aspects of the insect kingdom. And then a lot of their Transformer modes, or just their robot modes, I also like as well. And I love, how they use extensions of the animals that they are as weapons. Like Scorponok's tail and his claws, and the guns that come out of both Black Arachnia and Tarantulas' legs. The use of the head as a hand for Megatron, and of course Waspinator. But then again, everybody loves Waspinator. Isn't that right, Waspinator? I'm sorry, I'm looking behind me at my Waspinator figure and asking him if he likes his design. He says yes. He goes, Waspinator likes his design. Oh, I will be doing again that later. But I really do enjoy the designs aspects of the series. The special effects, again, being CGI, and very early CGI, the special effects, for the most part, are good. There are some special effects, though, especially the final big effect at the end of the season when Optimus Prime blows up the false moon that's destroying the planet. It seems disjointed. It seems like you can definitely see the layers within the CGI. I pose this to more of it being early CGI and the limitations of it, but it is something that is there. While it doesn't take me out, it is something noticeable. But again, that whole nostalgic feel and understanding of it being early CGI really helps, I think, to it not being a problem. Which it really isn't. I mean, for the most part, they're good, especially the dust and stuff like that and the explosions. But it is obvious early CGI. It's sometimes very computer game-like to put in a way. But again, adds to that sort of nostalgic feel of that mid-90s aspect that CGI was, or at least the first CGI was. And then the backgrounds, very, very nice. I love a lot of different locations. And I love the fact that they weren't afraid to go to locations that maybe had a lot of effects. Even if sometimes the effects were very video game-like or seemed like because of the limitations, the layers could be seen. I like the fact that the animators chose, hey, let's go with locations. Let's not be afraid of the locations we go to, having snow locations. And, the times they were in the snow looked beautiful. And I really enjoyed it. The Predacons being in sort of a lava pit, or lava area for that matter. sort of the mountainous area where the Maximals are, the jungle aspect, you know, and all of that stuff. I really, really enjoyed. With that being said, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back after playing a couple of promos, we're going to get into acting and story.
The funeral is over. Jonathan Kent is on the mend.
So, how's Clark's father?
Oh, much, much better.
Lois has returned home.
Lois, over here!
Harry, wife? Since when did you start meeting your staff at the airport? How'd you know I was returning on that flight?
A good editor checks out his hunches, Lois. I got a hot story I want you on straight away. I'm parked over here.
But just as Metropolis has learned to live without the Man of Steel...
I know, there was only one Superman, but Metropolis just hit the jackpot. Because we got four Supermen now, and nobody knows which of them, if any, is the real McCoy.
Four beings of incredible power and intellect have laid claim to the Man of Steel's name.
The last son of Krypton.
I live.
The Man of Steel.
Man of Steel coming through! Nobody move! This is a bust!
The Cyborg.
Yes, I'm Superman. I'm back.
The Boy of Steel.
Put me down!
Listen, pal, don't ever call me Superboy. Capiche?
The reign of the Superman is upon us, and so from crisis to crisis, a Superman podcast begins its epic coverage of this last act in the epic Death and Return of Superman saga. Every week, Michael Bailey and Jeffrey Taylor, along with the best and the brightest in the podcasting community, will cover this event in all of its forms, from the comics to the novelizations, to the audio drama, and beyond. Superman is back, but is any of them the real Man of Steel? Find out on From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, located at www.supermanhomepage.com and www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com. In June of 1962, a superhero unlike any other made his first appearance in the pages of Amazing Fantasy number 15, the final issue of that series. 6 months later, this character would receive his own title, and from there he would grow in popularity and be adapted into several animated series, a handful of live-action series both in the US and abroad, have countless action figures made in his likeness, dominate the cinema screen, and much, much more. It is fair to say that the Amazing Spider-Man is a pop culture icon and a fictional character that people all over the world identify with and love. This year, Spider-Man is turning 50, and Views from the Long Box, an internet radio series hosted by me, Michael Bailey, is going to celebrate the wall crawler in a series of episodes focusing on various aspects of the character's existence. Together with such podcasting luminaries as Brad Douglas, Andrew Leyland, John Wilson, and Scott Gardner, I'm going to give Spidey the biggest birthday card a comic fan could. He may not be my favorite character, but I like him a great deal, and he deserves the spotlight in this, his 50th year. Views from the Long Box can be found at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com. New episodes hit every Friday. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytooth production in association with the DiMonzo Corps of Milan, Italy.
And welcome back, and let's get right back into our review as we start to cover acting. And here we have the real strength of this show. You know, again, I talked about the fact that this was a show to sell toys, which it is. But one of the things, and I really find this about, you know, these shows that were to sell toys, like Transformers, whether it be Beast Wars or G1, like He-Man and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and G.I. Joe and all of these shows, what led to sort of the nostalgic feeling and the love for these shows was the voice acting. And with Beast Wars, you have some of the best voice acting that really make you believe in these characters and fall in love with these characters. This is Ocean Group dubbing from Vancouver, which, you know, again, you have Scott McNeil here. You have David Kanye, you know, who, he was Trace Kusternada in Gundam Wing. He played Megatron pretty much from this point onward, and eventually played Optimus Prime in the Transformers animated series from a couple years ago, being the only person to play both Optimus Prime and Megatron. And a lot of sort of names that you would see in other both anime series that are being dubbed from Ocean Group, and for that matter, North American animated series. And it just leads to, these are great actors who, the different voices they use and stuff they do really make you believe in the character. Especially, you know, Scott McNeil, you know. If you don't believe me that Scott McNeil is good, perhaps I should take you out the old-fashioned way. Brutally! I'd like to see a triad dino boob. Should I say lizard lips? Oh man, we're all gonna die. Oh, Waspinator doesn't hang on his side. Waspinator has a headache in his whole body. And of course, anybody who's heard Scott McNeil do this bit so much more better than me. Thunderbolt, big, strong, proud, and smart like a sack of hammers. I make joke about what I like to call Beast Wars roll call for Scott McNeil. But, just wonderful acting. Let's start with protagonists, the Maximals. Again, especially considering the Dinobot and Rat Trap, who are a lot of times play a sort of comedic team, I should say, and provide a lot of the comedy for the first season. It is this great thing to where there's this family aspect that these actors are able to portray. You know, even though they, a lot of times, have differences with each other and that stuff. You know, again, that whole very Brooklyn aspect, wisecracking that Scott McNeil gives Rat Trap, and then sort of the warrior attitude that he gives Dinobot. David Chalk, does a great job portraying some great leader aspects for Optimus Primal. Sort of the astute teacher aspects that Richard Newman gives Rhinox, and then Ian James Corlett, this very sort of young gun feel for Chitar. Blue Makuma does a wonderful job playing sort of older brother aspect for Tigertron. And then Pauline Newstone, she doesn't have much time in the first season, but again, gives a great feminine quality that's not seen for at most of the first season for the Maximals. But again, it is that family aspect to a lot of the great comedic moments in this series are especially between Rat Trap and Dinobot, which, God, how much I would pay to see Scott McNeil in one of those sessions where it's just him in the session because it's a scene of Dinobot, Rat Trap, and Waspinator. I would pay money to see that because it really shows you just how much of a skilled, actor Scott McNeil is, and why he's one of the best, and why he's part of the voice acting pantheon, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I mean, it's just this family aspect to, I'll give you an example. In one of the later episodes, Rat Trap is, of course, egging on Dinobot and Negan to a fight, and it ends up leading to, this, by the way, is one of my favorite episodes, but Rhinox being infected with a virus that caused him to discharge Energon. And so they send Dinobot and Rat Trap to try to find the antivirus to heal Rhinox from Tarantulas. And of course, the entire episode, they're fighting. And they're fighting all the way to the end, and it's just, they're back in Sentinel's base, and they're still fighting. There's Cheetor and Optimus Prime decide, and Optimus Prime goes, "It never ends, does it?" Or there's the episode where the Maximals almost are able to leave the planet, because they think they've eliminated the Predacons, but it turns out to be a trick, and their ship ends up crashing, and, you know, they have to save Dinobot, who had decided to stay behind, but tried to warn them, got hurt. And so Rat Trap's, like, stuffing him into the, you know, healing pods, like, "Man, if it wasn't for you, we'd be home right now." And he's like, the feeling is mutual, and they're going back and forth, and Optimus Prime looks at you, and Rhinox goes, "Well, they're taking it well." I just love that brand of comedy, and it really endears you to these characters. And then the Predacons are just as hilarious. I mean, Waspinator, you know, anytime Waspinator speaks, it's hilarious. Again, Scott McNeil's acting ability here. And then just great acting along the line from, you know, again, Scorponok's really loyalty, you really feel there. The treachery of both Tarantulas and Black Arachnia, and for that matter, Pterosaur. Inferno, who appears, again, towards the later half of the first season. His voice is just a joy to listen to. And of course, David Kanye, his quibbage, you know, on his insubordinates is hilarious at times. And again, it really endears you to the characters. You really care about both these sets, even though, yeah, the Predacons are the bad guys. You just enjoy watching this adventure and these battles fold out. And that's not to say there aren't serious episodes as well, where, you know, again, you're reminded, yeah, the Predacons are the bad guys. I hate these guys. I want to see them. I don't know if CMW wants to see them pay for their crimes, especially at the end of the first season. I'm talking a lot more about their comedy, but there are also a fair number of very serious episodes that are done very, very well. And the ability to show that range of comedy to serious that these actors show is just spot on and incredible. And again, it's these actors that make you believe in these CG characters and really give the soul to the series. And for that matter, that's really what I feel is missing from a lot of these CG shows, you know, and for that matter, CG movies, you know. And it's not to say their voice acting is bad, but, you know, especially for things like the DreamWorks movies, you know, Madagascar and Ice Age and Shrek and all of this stuff. You know, like, for instance, Shrek. I love Mike Myers. He does a great job. So does Eddie Murphy. But Eddie Murphy's playing Eddie Murphy. You know, you put one of these voice actors in that role, my God, I can only... I'm scared to imagine how awesome the role might be with one of these voice actors in there. But, alas, it is that instance, unfortunately, to where people don't see that. They say, oh, he's a well-known voice actor, so, oh, he must do an awesome job with the role. Not understanding that the unfortunate things, which we won't talk about here, that happened. But, again, that's why I feel a lot of those films don't have soul, as opposed to here, you see, even though it's CGI, the characters themselves feel alive and feel like real people to you because of the soul the actors give to them. Let's move on to story, and let's talk about the main plot first. The main plot is, and it gets kind of weary at the end because, again, there is a season 2 and a season 3, so the first season does end on a huge cliffhanger. Well, season 1 and 2 ends on cliffhangers, but a huge cliffhanger for the end of season 1, and then sort of the revelation that the initial reason you think that the Predacons stole the so-called golden disc that they did for Energon was really for something else. That's the first inkling you get for that, but as far as the main plot is concerned, because there are a lot of filler episodes, because, again, really bringing you into the characters, but the more serious episodes like The Trigger, The Probe, trying to, you know, the other voices, really lead to, you know, they're the more serious. Yeah, and there are some other serious episodes too, but as far as the main plot is concerned, again, the hint of this war between the, you know, Maximals and the Predacon, but again, it's this underlying mystery of why the Megatron and the whole mystery of the Golden Disk that isn't explored a whole lot. It's explored a whole lot more in Season 2, but I think what helps it not be just a dud as far as the storyline is concerned is the fact that there's a real mystery to it, and they don't, like, blow it out in, like, the first couple of episodes. They keep it in the dark, and every so often they'll remind you of it and, you know, make you, or say, remind you of the mystery of the Golden Disk. You know, and overall, the feeling, though, you get is that it is a fight over trying to get Energon so, you know, Megatron can power his visions of conquest and them fight. I mean, it really is that simple. It's just a simple storyline among that. But there, like I said, there's a deeper storyline with the Golden Disk and a mystery to it that doesn't become a dud because they'll bring it out and remind you of it every so often. And like I said, it keeps it interesting. And I do like the payoff you eventually see in Season 2, but that's for another review, by the way. But, you know, outside of that, there's tons of filler episodes that are really character-driven. Again, like I said, the acting gives this show its soul, which, again, goes to the part that really why a lot of these episodes work and why they're enjoyable to watch is that they're character-driven episodes. It's, you know, oh, hey, this is a Rat Trap episode. Oh, this is going to be fun. Or this is a Dinobot episode. You know, the whole Rat Trap trying to shut down Sentinel episode as an example. But again, most of the episodes outside of like episodes like The Trigger and The Voices and The Probe and, you know, the episodes that are really part of the main plot, when you get to a lot of the filler episodes, they're all character driven, and that's what makes the episodes work so much. And it really, again, it adds to these aspects that you feel for each squad, you know, the more family aspect of the Maximals, the sort of predatory and bumbling villain aspect of the Predacons. Again, it gives the show its nostalgic feel and its enjoying feeling. The fights is the next point to talk about with the show. And I love the fights. I thought the fights were good. I mean, early on, it really is, hey, let's blast our guns. And again, like any show that's targeted toward kids and trying to sell toys, these mother effers can't hit the broadside of a barn. that's the truth. I mean, occasionally they do hit, and I like that they show people getting hit and characters getting damaged and everything, but it is just like, really, when you look at the percentage of what they're firing and what they're hitting, it's like 8% of their shots may hit. They really couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. But even with that, you know, there's a lot of hand-to-hand combat scenes that are done really, really well. You know, there's fight scenes with Black Arachnia, with Cheetor, and Inferno, and the last episode that are really, really good. And have a martial arts aspect that you can actually follow and are really, really interesting considering it's a CG show. And I love the fact that a lot of the fights have a sort of cunning about them. You know, a lot of times the person who comes out the victor in a fight, you know, it's about ambushing and strategy. And, oh, I'm able to fool him into looking over here so I can get the jump on him over here. You know, and I love that aspect of the fights. It really does give this feeling of this is a war. And these are two sides who are battling each other. Last sort of main talking point we'll talk about is the series pace. I really, really enjoyed the series pace. Again, here's another show that is very successful, very nostalgic feeling, and again, it has this very organic pace. Here's the thing. They do a lot of filler episodes in this series. Really, you could probably point the sort of main serious and poignant episodes to about, I would say, 12 of the, I want to say, 26, 27 episodes that this series is. Actually, it's 28, I think, but that's not the main point. But of the 28, 12 are really, I think, important to the plot, if that. So there's a fair number of filler episodes. In fact, there's probably more filler episodes than there are serious episodes. But there never feels like, oh, this is... The filler episodes have enough info to sort of connect to the main plot that doesn't feel like, oh, hey, this is a filler episode. Oh, hey, this is the main plot. Oh, we're just stagnated. And the way they pace the series and where they place the sort of main plot episodes as opposed to the filler episodes, it all feels organic. And that's really, again, another reason that this show is popular and why the show is very, very good and very well done. You know, they do give it that organic feel to where the episodes are placed and how the pace of the season goes. And for that matter, the pace of each episode. You know, there are very, very few times, a time here or there, but for the most part, it never feels like any episode, for that matter, loses steam. Like I said, there's a couple episodes here or there where they do kind of lose steam and they kind of... Oh, yeah. And a lot of times it's also if I've seen the episode so many times, but even then, you know, like Double Dinobot, I've seen that episode numerous times, and I still enjoy watching it. I mean, not every episode is a success, and not that they're bad, but it is a thing to where the series pace, or the pace of that episode for that matter, gets a little wary, and you do like, I'll just fast forward a little bit through this. The last point we'll talk about is particular episodes I like, to give suggestions to which episodes to watch. Again, the first two episodes are, I think, really, really good, and are really a good start to the series. Double Jeopardy is also a really good episode where Optimus and Rat Trap formulate a secret plan to trick the Predacons into thinking that Rat Trap has joined their side to find how... the Predacons are, like, getting to jump on them. A Better Mousetrap is also an absolutely incredible episode where Rat Trap gets caught in the Axion's new defense system of Sentinel and has to, like, traverse the ship and shut it down. Again, Victory, I think, is a very, very good episode. Double Dinobot is just a hilarious episode of... the Predacons trying to... making a clone of Dinobot and trying to trick the Autobots into leaving so the clone can raise the shield so they can try to destroy the Maximal base. But things just keep going awry. And it leads to one of the funniest scenes to where you basically... Dinobot gets rid of his clone by eating him. And he goes, "He was delicious." And I just love the reply of Optimus Prime there going, "You're disgusting." And Dinobot just smiling, and it's the perfect end to the episode. The Spark, which is a really serious episode, and sort of the whole... the creation of a Transformer, and the Spark getting life, and the whole... the beginning of life, and creating life aspect, cinnamon to the episode, I think is really, really well done episode. And has some very good fights in it. Call of the Wild... it's also a very good episode where, you know, the Maximals are forced to stay in beast mode as the shielding for the Axion has to be repaired, and their animal counterparts seem to take over. And then the very next episode after that, Dark Voyage, the series of three episodes, which is Call of the Wild, Dark Voyage, and Possession, are all great episodes. Okay, squash that. There's five episodes in a row that are very good. Call of the Wild, Dark Voyage, which, basically, the Maximals are in Dark Voyage mining Energon, and they get ambushed by Scorponok and Waspinator, and it leads them being blind, and they have to make their way back to the ship blind. Possession, where Waspinator basically gets possessed by the spark of Starscream. Low Road, which has one of the greatest, again, another great ending. I talked about that earlier. where, you know, Brinox gets this cold-like virus that causes him to expel Energon, and during the episode, he eats these vines that are, like, surrounding the ship. And so when, like, they corner Megatron, Brinox gets an upset stomach, and what ends up happening is they defeat the Predacons by an expulsion of Energon by means of a huge fart from Brinox, which they don't show, but implied. And it's absolutely hilarious. And then Law of the Jungle, again, another serious episode that really deals with the whole aspect of, you know, this war and what's it doing to the planet that they're on. And Tigertron not wanting to harm the planet, but eventually understanding that, you know, there's nothing they can do about it because the Predacons won't stop. You know, those are really the best episodes of the series, and I enjoy them all. Overall, when it comes to Beast Wars Season 1, it's a great first season, and there's a real nostalgic feeling for this show that so many Transformer fans love. I mean, you have Dinobot, who's in the Transformer Hall of Fame. I mean, that has to say something, right? Well, it says something about Scott McNeil's acting as well, but again, people fell in love with these characters because it is a very good show. Is it perfect? Not by any means. And it's obviously a early attempt at doing a completely CG show. And for that matter, a show aimed at kids to sell toys. But it's still a good show. There's a lot of good episodes, a lot of good stories. There's a lot of great comedy. And the acting just gives this show a soul that, again, warms your heart. So, at the end of the day, Beast Wars Season 1 gets a 4 out of 5 from me. So, that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. If you have any comments or suggestions or anything you want to leave for the show, remember there are several ways you can do that. One, you can email the show at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution and then the numbers 132. yahoo.com. So absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page that you can find by going to Facebook and searching for Absolution Network and liking us and leave us a comment. You can also leave a comment on the website, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, remember to check out all our other 132 production sites, like Random Redbox Reviews, Flashpoint, and, of course, my other podcasting sites, which include Comic Book Crazy, which you can find at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. You can find my Comic Book Crazy podcast, along with Hexcast. And the comic book pits there. And, of course, my Godzilla podcast, Tokyo SOS, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're at any of the sites, remember to check out our friends on the Sidebar, who do wonderful, wonderful podcasts. I really suggest checking them out. They do a great job. This includes Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box and from Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers Podcast, and Scott Gardner's Two True Freaks, and of course all our other friends that you can find on the Sidebar. And that is it for this episode. Next week we finish Toonami Month as we head to the skies and space. Here's da 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 da. Yes, that's right. Next week we review Robotech, the first 25 episodes. So until next time, my Toonami generation. Stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort. But I am not worried. For one day you will fail.
by DJ Club Nova. Don't sleep on it.